Hi, everyone, and welcome to the 62nd episode of the Professional Book Nerds Podcast, presented by Overdrive. This is Jill. Hi, Adam.
How are you doing today, Jill?
It's Halloween.
It's Halloween. We're sorry for the slight delay on this release. It'll be a few hours late. Peek behind the curtain. Jill and I live in Cleveland, where our company is located, as you've heard many times. And I'm not going to get cocky or confident or anything like that, but our baseball team is in the World Series. And World Series games take forever.
They do.
So we're all very sleepy, and it slipped our minds. We woke up and we got to the office today, which is Monday. Yeah, we're like, we didn't post an episode today. But we have one. We have one for you guys. Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween.
Do you want to tell everyone what you're dressed as since I can't see you?
This is Minnie Mouse.
It's a really awesome Minnie Mouse.
Thank you.
It's so good. I went as Eleven from Stranger Things. My wife went as Dustin because we're awesome and progressive and all those good things.
You're fabulous.
Yeah. But I'm not dressed as it today. Today I'm dressed as someone who's really tired because they stayed up till 1 a.m. watching the Indians. Anywho, we have a lot of fun in our office.
We do.
During Halloween, we throw a big Halloween party in the middle of the day. No work gets done.
No.
No work at all gets done today. People just wandering around.
Maybe we shouldn't say that part.
Well, I know. It's true, though.
Some work gets done.
Yeah. One of our product owners who develops our app, he's very short, and it's a running joke around here. So he's dressed up as Napoleon today.
Oh, my God. That's genius. I'll define him.
So good. Yeah. Such a shout out to MJ. He looks amazing. He always does joke. He always does really funny, like, I'm a short person outfit. It's really good. I think he was a leprechaun one year.
Yeah.
Yeah, good stuff. Anyway, do you want to tell people who this is? If they see the name of the title of this podcast episode, they'll know by now. But who did we speak with?
We spoke with Kyle Mills, who is the author who took over the Vince Flynn series of books.
Yeah, and he was in town to do a book signing book event. We didn't host that one. We just chatted with him ahead of time. It was a lot of fun. I love when we get to sit down together and talk with authors. And we had a conversation about, you know, how he felt about taking over a wildly popular person's works. And I don't know that I could ever do that.
No.
I feel like it's hard enough. I mean, you know this. I don't. But writing a book is hard enough. And then actively being like, I need to write in a different person's voice,
because he does it for the Vince Flynn books and then also Robert Ludlum, like that's just mind-blowing.
So he's writing as himself and then two other people who write in the same genre that you write, but very different voices. And so he's really cool. He's really down to earth. I think we were harping a little bit on, like, wow, this is so crazy that you do this, and he was just like, yeah, it is, it's awesome. Like, he was super
I know, but that's
chill.
Like the most fascinating part, I think.
Wasn't a big deal to him.
No, not at all.
Yeah. If people want to get a hold of us, how can they do that, Jill?
They can find us on Facebook and Twitter and email us at feedback@overdrive.com.
Yes, you can. We read all of those things. And go to overdrive.com. You'll see some really great lists of books you can read. We've mentioned a few times, Jill made a Westworld one. She's obsessed with Westworld.
I am.
We were just talking about it before we started recording. There's all sorts of stuff on there that they can enjoy. Anything else that you want to share?
We have a very exciting podcast coming next Monday.
Oh, man, we really do. We can tell people.
Can we tell people?
Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead.
So be sure to come back next week. Hopefully we'll have this one up on time. But we got to sit down, and we have another live one coming, and it's with Jodi Picoult.
Oh, my God. She's so awesome. She was so awesome. I loved her so much.
Me too.
Yeah. When we get to meet these people, and they're even more amazing than you think they're going to be.
I know.
So, she tells so many wonderful stories, and we'll get into that next week, but I'm excited for
everyone. So be sure to come back on Monday for Jodi Picoult.
Yeah, and we'll have an episode Thursday.
We will.
We don't know what it is going to be yet, but it'll be great. You're going to love it. All right, as Jill said, Jill, you said something at the end of the last podcast that got the Indians 2 wins. So do you want to throw that out there? you want to throw that out there one more time?
I will. Cleveland against the world.
Enjoy this episode of the Professional Book Nerds Podcast.
Today we're joined by Kyle Mills, New York Times bestselling author of numerous books, including The Aries Decision and The Survivor. Kyle has written best-selling books not only in worlds he himself has created, but also in the popular Covert One series, as well as Vince Flynn's Mitch Rapp series. Kyle, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
So when I read crime mystery or geopolitical espionage thriller novels, basically authors like yourself and Tom Clancy and Vince Flynn, of course, I always wonder where the writers get the knowledge of government agencies. Your knowledge comes from a pretty unique upbringing, correct?
Yeah, my father was an FBI agent for 25 years, and he became the director of Interpol, and he was the legal attaché to the United Kingdom for a while, which is a fancy way of saying he ran the FBI's operation in London. So, yeah, I kind of grew up around this, you know, the spec ops guys and the CIA and the FBI police. So, you know, as a young boy, you'd hear all those stories and you'd kind of sit there and wide-eyed and listen to all the adventures these people had having. I never forgot them. I think they're a little stunned now that I still remember this stuff. And you must have been 13 when I told you that story, but, you know, it really sticks with you.
All right, and I have to ask, because when I read these books, there's certain things in there that I'm like, there's no way that could possibly happen, but wait, could it happen? And then I start second-guessing myself, and I wonder how much is fiction and how much is kind of based in truth. Are there ever things that you have learned, either from your father or just from experiences now, that you think you have some information that maybe you shouldn't be sharing in these books?
Oh, yeah, you always have to... fictionalize a little bit after you've talked to people and they've given you, you know, some interesting information or interesting ideas about where you could go with something. Sometimes you don't have to as much. I knew a guy who was the head of security, an FBI guy, in Vegas, and we were talking one day, and he said, "Do you know how we get the money out of Vegas?" And I never really thought about it, but it all piles in, and you'd have to do something.
Right.
And I came up with some incredible scenario of like underground secret railroads. With he's like, no, we just pile it all onto trucks and like just drive. Interestingly,
seriously,
yeah. Interestingly, on the loneliest highway in America, because I drove it, and that's what the signs say. And I thought, I think I can figure out how to steal that. So I wrote an entire book about stealing that money.
Sure, I mean, why wouldn't you?
Yeah. So did anyone come up to you after you wrote that book and was like, hey, we have questions for you?
It was kind of funny to do the research for that because I had to drive from Vegas. So they take it to the Federal Reserve in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And so you have to drive that lonely road and time everything and figure out where the gas stations were. And finally, you can't take pictures of the Federal Reserve, so I had to pose like a tourist and have my wife take them around me.
Oh my god, that's amazing.
And but yeah, so it's a lot of fun stuff like that. People tell you that you never really thought about. Uh-huh. And then if you have kind of the mind of a criminal or a terrorist, you can think of something to do with that.
Yeah,
that's hilarious.
Yeah.
So, what is your research process like for your books?
Well, it's a lot easier now with the internet. The first one I wrote was kind of pre-internet, and that I had to lean really heavily on my contacts. A lot of people at the DEA helped me with that one. Now it's honestly a little easier. Most things you can kind of look up. If not, I have contacts that I can hit on. And then sometimes, you know, one guy I work with is a fan of Vince's. Because I honestly don't know that much about firearms. Mm-hmm. And you'd think being a thriller writer from Wyoming, I'd have a bunch of guns. and he called me he emailed me one day and said, you know, I know a lot about firearms if you ever needed any advice. And yeah, people send you stuff out all the time, but what do they really know? And mm-hmm. I said, well, it's funny you should say that. I'm writing the scene where a guy has an AR-15 and it's got a suppressor on it. How loud is that? And the next day he sent me a video of him shooting his AR-15 with a suppressor and a sound meter.
Oh.
And I thought, hey, you're my guy.
Yeah, that's convenient.
So yeah, I've actually developed a relationship with that guy, and he does. So he checks everything I say about firearms.
That's really interesting. Okay, so you mentioned Vince Flynn, and you've also written some books in the Robert Ludlum kind of area and line of series of books. how does something like that come about? As an author, what is the process or kind of, I guess, I know on your website you talk about how you just kind of got a phone call, but what is that process like when someone tells you, hey, we want you to write these books from this very famous person's perspective?
Well, the Ludlum one was really out of the blue. That was literally kind of a phone call. Mm-hmm. And they had read a book I had written called Darkness Falls that was about, that was kind of a very science-oriented book. I'm kind of a science geek. Mm-hmm. And they had a series that did those kinds of things that they wanted resurrected. So I actually had a bunch of ideas for kind of science-y books that I'd never written, just because they weren't kind of roaring in my genre, really. Mm-hmm. And so it was a great opportunity to drag those out and do them. As far as Vince went, I think they were looking at a few authors to do that. Mm-hmm. And they called me and said, kind of, where would you go with this book? Because the Last Man, the last book that he wrote, clearly didn't end. Mm-hmm. It was meant to continue. The storyline was meant to continue on. And I read, you know, I had read all the books already just as a fan, and I read that book and said, I told him where I thought I'd go with it, but then I said, you know, I really probably won't. Yeah, and I'll change my mind. Mm-hmm. 5 times. So I thought, well, I probably didn't get that job. It was a terrible interview. And I honestly didn't write anything like Vince, which is kind of funny. But I did, in the end, I did get the job, surprisingly. Mm-hmm. And ended up finishing The Survivor.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and you mentioned that you don't write like Vince wrote. What was the fan reaction? I mean, how did people kind of receive that?
They really liked it. Mm-hmm. So it didn't really hurt me. In fact, it kind of helped me, I think, that I didn't write anything like Vince. Mm-hmm. Because anytime I sort of felt myself falling into my own voice, it became really obvious. Mm-hmm. And I think if I had written books a lot like him, then there would have been a tendency to sort of drift into writing my own book about his characters. Mm-hmm. And in this book, I really wanted to create, you know, kind of a forgery in a way. I didn't want anybody to be able to. He wrote 2.5 pages of that book before he died, and I wanted to make sure nobody knew which ones they were. So it was, I worked really hard to just very much write a Vince Flynn book.
Sure.
So kind of flipping that a little bit, if you could pick a writer who maybe would one day take over your writing.
Not morbidly.
Not morbidly, just out of curiosity. Do you have anybody in mind you'd want to be? You would like sort of...
Oh, man, I don't know. That's a really good question. There are so many that I love. I think probably the guy who writes most like me, but I write the most about, like, would be Frederick Forsyth. Mm-hmm. But I don't think he's going to probably want to take over.
Well, this is just like a magic. This is
Well,
magical question.
You know, with the adventure stuff, I mean, it's hard to say it because I've written so many different kinds of books. Like with the adventure stuff, you know, think about Brad Thor, mm-hmm. Or somebody like that, and you know. Harlan Coben, mm-hmm. and Dan Silva. I mean, so many good writers out there. Lee Child. Mm-hmm. I'll take them all.
Yeah, so just have me try one. Yeah. All right, so can you maybe give our listeners who might not be familiar a little bit of information about your latest book, which is Order to Kill, correct?
Right. So it takes up where The Survivor left off, mm-hmm. because that's sort of the Mitch Rapp universe kind of continues through the books and doesn't have real hard endings anywhere. And that one explores Russia and ISIS and kind of the devastating effects of really low oil prices on some fairly unstable countries, mm-hmm. Russia being one of them. And I thought that would be kind of an interesting thing to do with Mitch Rapp, the main character, because there are things that Vince didn't really explore. He would have never known anything about the rise of ISIS, mm-hmm. or Vladimir Putin sort mm-hmm. of getting a little kooky around the world.
That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah, so it's kind of fun to take Mitch Rapp and do some things that he's never done before, kind of put him in situations he's never done before. And I did that, and then I gave him a rival, a nemesis that is pretty close to being equal to him, which mm-hmm. is something he's never had before either. The fun of the Mitch Rapp books was always you knew he wasn't going to get killed, but you wanted to see how he killed everybody else.
Right.
Sure.
And this one, you know, when he has to face the guy, he starts thinking, you know, I'm not as young as I used to be. I got a pretty bad right knee. I don't see as well as I did. You know, I might not be able to take this guy. Mm-hmm. So just to see how those characters react in situations that they've never been in before is kind of fun.
So we talked about your research process. What's your writing process like?
I'm kind of a 9-to-5-er. 5 days a week, I write generally a chapter a day. And depending on what my deadline looks like, this time I'm writing a chapter a day, rough draft, till I finish the book, and then I'll go back and do a second draft before I turn it in. I guess my first drafts are a little messy.
Yeah, most people's are.
Yeah. And then do you kind of purposely leave yourself like a place that you would stop off, so you know if you have something to start off in the morning, or do you finish a thought? I've kind of seen both. I've talked to people who do both. One, it's kind of like the Hemingway, like stop in the middle of a sentence kind of an idea. And then I've also had people tell me like, no, I finished an entire scene because I'm terrified I'm going to forget it. So
yeah, I would never forget because I write really elaborate outlines. Mm-hmm. But no, I finish the scene, and it's great when it's a really, really short scene because then you can be done by lunchtime, but then sometimes it goes on forever and then you're there all night. So, but yeah, it would definitely, it's kind of hard. I've been writing a chapter for the last 3 days because I'm on tour. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of driving me nuts because you have to pick up in the middle of the scene and mm-hmm. try to get started again.
Do you have any advice for aspiring writers?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's definitely some mistakes I made, for sure. One, I would say you've got to finish the book. And a lot of people really struggle with that, and they are constantly going back and revising stuff that they've done. Don't do that until you're done with the book. I actually have a friend who's a terrific writer and very successful, and he does the whole one page a day. And it's perfect at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. Oh, I can't imagine doing that. I don't know how you'd ever finish a novel.
It's a big page.
Yeah, so he's like, 400 days later, I'll be done. And then it's done. He just sends it off. But I would say that's an important one. And remember, you know, that the editing process is really different than the writing process. Mm-hmm. The writing process is fun, but the editing process is where you've got to criticize yourself and you know, polish it, and don't skimp on that. I know a lot of people that love the writing process and they get kind of bogged down and depressed in the editing process. Mm-hmm. and that's something you've got to really pay attention to.
I think James Dashner said the exact same thing.
James Dashner literally said the exact same thing. He's like, I hate editing so much. It was just funny because I've heard a lot of other authors say, like, editing is writing. Like, that's the part where you... But that's the part, you know, anyone can, like, write a first draft. It's a writer who has the ability and the persistence to sit through and edit all of it. And I'm, like, nodding my head. And then James Asher's like, oh, yeah, it's terrible. I really hated it. I'm just laughing. I'm like, this is so funny, like, the spectrum of everything.
For me, it's so much easier than writing. I mean, you can fix, what was it, Nora Roberts said, you can fix a bad page but not a blank page. I mean, once I've got a big stack of paper, I figure I can get this done. It's when you're staring at that blank one that I think is hard.
So since you said you get through kind of the whole thing first and then you start editing, for you, as you're going through that process, are you ever writing scenes and, like, as you're writing them, you're just like, I'm going to pare this down when I get back to it? Or do you kind of think throughout the whole thing, like, this could all work, and then when you go back, you start to find things that you want to change a little bit here and there?
I definitely write a lot of notes to myself mm-hmm. in the manuscript. And yeah, I've written scenes where I think, this is terrible. There's just really nothing worth saving here. But I got to write the scene, and then I'll decide what to do with it later. Sometimes you edit it, sometimes you just cut it. Mm-hmm. So that's the other thing I think people, writers, and we all fall into this category, that you can kind of fall in love with your own words, and it's, or at the very least, with all the work you did, mm-hmm. and think, I'm going to save this. And sometimes it's not worth saving. Mm-hmm. So you have to be able to let go.
Yeah.
Since you write your own books and then, you know,
Ludlums and Flynn's. Is it hard kind of bouncing between, moving between those different worlds?
No, I haven't had too much of a problem. I've been lucky in that I don't go back and forth too much. I kind of then do them in blocks. Okay. Mm-hmm. So right now, I'm definitely in the Vince Flynn, Mitch Rapp universe. And if I had to jump out of that, yeah, and then jump back into it, I think mm-hmm. it'd be kind of difficult. But so far, it's been pretty consistent.
And you mentioned with, at least with the Vince Flynn stuff, that people were aware you were writing it and you didn't really concern yourself to try and write his exact style. But do you ever find yourself kind of consciously being like, okay, this is a Mitch Rapp book. I need to write it a certain way. Like, do you concern yourself with that, or is it just you're going to write the way that you write and it just so happens that you have this ability to kind of understand that world and tell a story in it?
Well, with the Ludlum stuff, I had a lot of free hand there because it was kind of starting up an old series that hadn't been worked on in a long time. And one of my jobs there was to sort of recreate the universe and set it on a path. Mm-hmm. So if somebody else wanted to write those books, you know, they could. Vince's stuff, though, was really different. He had huge fan base. They were all really rabid, and they loved the book. So it's kind of if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, I am extremely conscious when I write his books of this is a Vince Flynn book. Mm-hmm. The scenes aren't necessarily what I would normally write. The characters, I tended to write much more flawed, kind of human, you know, characters, weaker characters in a way that, whereas his are incredibly strong and mm-hmm. very righteous, and you know, mine tend to be chain smoking drunks. So yeah, it's a whole different kind of book that I and it was funny because they asked for a couple of books from me during my interview, and I thought, what am I going to give them that's even close to this? The only one I had was sort of this Navy SEAL that was really funny and who was kind of this unrepentant mass murderer. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I'm not sure this is going to play well, but it's at least a military character.
Yeah.
So that's definitely different. And when I do diverge from his formula, I'm very aware of it.
Yeah.
Which is another thing I would go back and say to aspiring writers, if you're going to break a rule, make sure you understand the rule you're breaking.
Yeah.
And so I always do with his stuff. If I do something funny in it, I'm pretty aware that he didn't really do that. So I keep it toned down.
And I will say on your website, that's something I really loved, is you have a section for Vince Flynn fans, and you literally say, like, here's my most Vince Flynn-like book, ranging to my least. And I love that you like literally put your own books in order, like, all right, listen, here's how you can get used to me, here are all the books, and here's what's like him and what's not. That's not a question, I was like, what a...
That's a good idea.
Going out of your way to really say, like, here I am, guys.
Here's and some of my books are really not, I mean, you know, I wrote a general fiction book in the first person once about a guy who works for the tobacco industry. I was afraid people would get those and go, ah!
Like, I feel like that would be intimidating. Like, that would be the most intimidating part, like, having this universe with these very dedicated fan base. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'd be terrified to even try.
I know we're harping on it, but it, like, blew both of our minds. It's like, man, what a...
Not just one, but two.
Yeah, you're much braver than we are. That's what we're doing.
I remember my wife saying, well, this could really blow up in your face. But, yeah.
Positive really reinforcement. Really
good. But, you know, and it's funny, even before the book was done and anybody had ever read it, you know, his fans were really positive about the whole thing. I got a lot of emails because I thought it might be the opposite. It was a huge amount of hate mail. Mm-hmm. And I didn't at all. It was great.
Nice. I don't know. I think for me, if there's like a character that you really love, you don't really care.
Yeah, you just want more of that character. Yeah.
Yeah, it transcends the author, which is what we all shoot for. And, you mm-hmm. know, Vince achieved that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You hate to see that character go away. It's such a big part of people's lives. Mm-hmm.
For sure.
And then, so when you were growing up, obviously a lot of your stories come from your father and his background, and that's where you get a lot of that knowledge from. But were there books that kind of captured your imagination and sparked a interest in the literary world? I know you worked a lot before you became a writer, but when you were growing up, I guess, what were the books that inspired you?
You know, when I was younger, I loved Stephen King stuff, I think.
Man, this is also a string, all of it.
First, well, everybody does. Yeah, yeah.
It's Joel.
I'm a huge Stephen King fan, but also James Dashner.
James Dashner, yeah. You guys should hang out. It's pretty funny.
Well, you know, it's... He's like, you know, they say, you know, the Velvet Underground, you know, not that many people listen to him, but every single one started a band. And I think it's like Stephen King, everybody thinks, I want to be a writer.
It's true. Uh-huh.
Unfortunately, we can't all do it like him. But, yeah, so I remember reading Salem's Lot when it came out. Mm-hmm. So I must have been like 80 years old or something, sitting under my covers reading that book. But yeah, books like that, in my early life, I would say... Trevanian stuff I really liked, like Shibumi, because they were really they were thrillers, but they were really funny. Mm-hmm. James Clavell for sure. Ludlum, mm-hmm. was a lot of fun. I thought Tom Clancy, when he came out, I was a little older. I thought he kind of transcended the mm-hmm. The genre and was probably the best mm-hmm. at that anybody ever, as good as anybody ever was. Mm-hmm.
And then contemporaries, do you have people that...
A lot of people I just said.
Oh, so yeah. A lot of people still, that's a really good point. Yeah. They're all still very much writing, yeah. All right. I foot in mouth.
So we're a library company. We work a lot with libraries. We're interviewing in a library
yes,
right
we
now.
Are.
Do you have any memories of going to the library as a kid?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, my mom used to drop me off there to get rid of me. And I'd sit there and... do my little book reports and plagiarize huge sections of the encyclopedia, mm-hmm. I think like we all did.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, I'd go and... My parents were big readers, too, so we always had these huge shelves, but I didn't have very many kids' books, so I kind of delved into the adult stuff when I was really young, which probably suited me because I think my parents would say... stop reading those novels and study. And now it works out that it's a good thing I did.
Alright, so towards the end of all of our podcasts, we like to ask kind of 9 rapid fire questions. These are easy, lighthearted. We call them the Nerd 9, because professional book nerds. So not too much thought about these, but first thing that comes to your mind. You ready?
Right. Yeah, I'm ready.
Alright, what is the last book you read?
It was in Spanish. Let me translate it. I can't. Lettuce? I don't know. The last book I read in English, though, was Josh Hood's new one, and I can't remember what it was called, though. It was really good.
We'll accept it. What's your favorite place to read?
See, that was a really long answer.
Well, that's okay. That's a good job. You did a good job.
Okay. My favorite place to read? My living room, sitting in the window.
Do you have a guilty pleasure?
Oh, so many. I'm a big skier, so that's what I do when I should be working.
What's one place you'd like to travel that you haven't yet been to?
Tehran.
That's a really good answer.
That's a good answer.
What's your favorite holiday?
Oh, Christmas for sure.
Favorite movie?
7 Samurai.
Cats or dogs?
Cats.
Favorite food?
Pretty much anything Indian.
And then I think I know the answer to this one, but if you could have dinner with anyone, alive or dead, who would you choose?
Maybe, sounds really pompous, but maybe Albert Einstein.
Mm-hmm. See, I thought for sure you were going to say Vince Flynn. That was my assumption.
That would have probably been a better answer.
No.
I could really use to have dinner with Vince Flynn.
I have to back up. Did you read the book in Spanish?
Yeah, I'm trying to learn Spanish.
Oh, okay.
So it's embarrassing because people ask me, what's the last book you read? And I read all these books incredibly slowly because my Spanish isn't very good. So it's like Harry Potter and Matilda and stuff like that. Right now I'm reading like Water for Chocolate. And that's why I couldn't... I was trying to think what was the translation of that.
Okay.
Como agua para chocolate, I guess.
So is that just... Just wanted to learn is it a second language for you, or is it a...
Yeah, just bucket list item, mm-hmm. learn a second language, and we're going to Spain at the end of the month. So I thought, well, I should really...
It's actually not a bad way to do it. I feel like if you read books, especially ones you're familiar with already, you can kind of compare side by side a little
read them
bit.
Behind each other. So
so you can kind of...
That would be much better than sitting and like in front of a computer repeating.
I last about 5 minutes on this thing.
I know. I have a Rosetta Stone for Japanese. And I was really good for like 2 months. And I was like, I'm going to be able to do this. And then I got busy for like a month and went back and I had forgotten all of it. I was like, well, I'm never going to open this up again. So that was money well spent.
It's one of the hardest things I've ever done. Mm-hmm. And so we'll see if it ever really works out. I'm not sure.
You could have totally just told us, like, yeah, I'm fluent in Spanish, and I read in Spanish all the time. You could have left it at that.
You know, the worst word in the world, fluent. Because people are always telling me that, and it made me feel so bad about myself for a while. They're like, I just went down to Costa Rica, I was surfing for a couple weeks, and by the end of it, I was fluent. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I've been studying for like 8 years, and I still have to hack through Harry Potter. Am I just an idiot?
Yeah, well...
I realized their definition of fluency was dame un taco, baby.
Yeah, puerto ir al baño. They can ask for where the restroom is. And, donde está la biblioteca. That's like the two that I remember. Last question. You can go ahead.
What do you hope readers take away from your books?
Oh, it kind of depends on the books. I've written so many strange books. I hope they learn something. I've written on a lot of science and geopolitics and things like that, and I always try to take a different perspective or kind of a different moral stance and to make people think about, like my first book was about somebody poisoning the U.S. narcotics supply, the idea that in the end it would save lives as people stopped taking drugs, and it was kind of this, you know, horrible choice. And to make people think, well, who was the good guy and who was the bad guy in that book? So hopefully that's it.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Readers can sample and borrow the titles mentioned in today's episode from overdrive.com, and our library friends can add these titles to their collections and marketplace.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.